is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. It's good to have you with us today. I'm Bonnie North. For some time, we've been told that soon, more Americans than ever will be reaching retirement age. Well, we're there. The first of the baby boomers are getting Social Security checks, using Medicare, and taking advantage of senior discounts at movie theaters. And that means more pressure than ever on the nation's health care system as it deals with the increasing health concerns of an aging population. But this is also a time when more people than ever are seeking to stay ahead of the curve and head into the latter third of their lives in good health. For the next several days, Lake Effect and the WUWM Newsroom are concentrating our coverage on issues of health and wellness. Project Milwaukee, Wise Today, Well Tomorrow, will come at the issue from a variety of angles and will culminate in live broadcasts of Morning Edition and Lake Effect from the Pabst Theater next Wednesday. As we mentioned, there is more pressure than ever on the nation's healthcare system, and more pressure than ever for reform. And just as the baby boomers are retiring, a new administration is sweeping into office. Julie Rovner is NPR's national health policy correspondent and the author of Healthcare Politics and Policy A to Z. Rovner tells Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke that the last time there was a concerted healthcare reform effort in this country, there was also a Democratic Congress and a new Democratic president. But she says circumstances have changed a lot since then.
Well, things have gotten, I think you could probably say by any objective measure, worse. We now spend $2 trillion a year on health care, which is far more than any other industrialized country. There are 46 million people with no health insurance. In 1993, the last time we attempted health reform, there were more like 33 million people without health insurance. The proportion of the population without health insurance is up to about 16%. So it's certainly going to be a tougher row to hoe. We now have 78 million baby boomers on the cusp of becoming eligible for Medicare, so there's going to be much more stress on that program, which was not the case back in 1993, 1994. And we're obviously on the precipice, or into, depending on who you believe, what seems to be a fairly major recession. The nation has just pledged $700 billion for a bailout, so no one ever said this was going to be easy.
Do you think that the fact that the population is aging to a degree that it was not in 1993 is going to have a significant impact? Is it enough that that those percentages of the aging population are up? Is that going to be incentive to get something done?
Well, it certainly gives you a population that's more sensitive to the need for health insurance. Obviously, older people use more health care, more expensive health care. So on the one hand, it makes it harder. On the other hand, it makes the public, you know, more demanding of the need to do something about the health care system, about the health insurance system in particular. If you have to go out and buy your own health insurance and you're 25, it's not all that expensive. If you have to go out and buy your own health insurance and you're 55, it's really expensive. So certainly, you know, 15, 17 years ago, it wasn't such a big problem financially as it is today for people who are being laid off, depending on how, you know, on, you know, what your age is and what the average age is.
Do you think there's more agreement this time that there's something wrong with the status quo?
Well, I think there's certainly more agreement among some of the stakeholders who have something to say about what does and doesn't pass in Washington. There seems to be general agreement that a lot of the groups that really prevented something from happening last time, business groups, health provider groups, and by that I mean doctor groups, hospital groups, the drug industry, who really, the lobbyists who really stopped things from happening, have decided that they simply can't afford the status quo anymore, particularly the business community has really come to Washington hat in hand and said that healthcare costs, rising healthcare costs, are just crippling our ability to compete globally and, you know, compete with each other. And it's too much. We need help. We need to do something about healthcare costs. And we really need the government to participate with us as a partner. The health insurance industry, I think, is even ready to swear fealty to participate in some kind of a solution. I think we've seen this in a lot of these coalitions. People have probably seen this ad for Divided We Fail, which has, you know, a donkey at one end and an elephant at the other, which is a business labor group, business labor and the AARP coming together. So we've seen a lot of these sort of what we call strange bedfellow groups of people who would not have ever worked together in the 1990s who've come together and said, really, it's time to do something about it. Now, I should caution that the fact that you have all these coalitions who come together and do these, you know, sort of white papers and these big broad statements that say, it's time to fix this is one thing. When you actually get down to writing legislation and getting into those details, fixing it is quite another. So it's a long step from saying, you know, we're going to hold hands and sing kumbaya to actually getting to the White House and signing legislation.
Well, and wouldn't it be something to see them all joining hands on the White House lawn and singing kumbaya? But what are the political lines that are likely to be drawn in this debate now that all the sides seem to say that that something has to be done?
Well, if I can go back to the $2 trillion that we're spending on health care, all of that money is somebody's income. You got to remember that. A lot of people making a lot of money in the health care system. And, you know, people say, well, where's the money going to come from to pay for major health care reform? Well, there's plenty of money, as people like to say, sloshing around in that system to pay for everybody having coverage and everybody having pretty much good medical care. The question is that nasty little word, redistribution. You're going to have to redistribute it, which means you're going to have to take some money away from some people, and they are not going to like that. And that is ever the fight, is figuring out how to more rationally, and there's that also, that other nasty R word. The two nasty words in healthcare reform are redistribution and rationing. You know, how to more rationally distribute that money so that everybody gets what they need, and some people don't get too much, and some people don't get too little, and, you know, you're going to gore a lot of people's oxes. And that's where the fights come in, is who gets what and who gets how much of this huge healthcare pie. And that's where the fights really start, and they will start. And then you have overlaid over that the perennial fight that's been going on for basically 100 years about what level of government involvement do you want in healthcare? Do you want the market to play more of a role? Do you want the government to play more of a role? We have a very hybrid system right now. We have the government paying basically almost half of the nation's healthcare bill and private forces paying basically half of the nation's health care bill. Are we going to move more towards the government? Are we going to move more towards the private market? Are we going to find a way to really let them coexist? And that's a continuing fight also. So you really have those sort of two forces, the, you know, who's going to pay more and who's going to get more and who's going to get less, and then what level, or, you know, what role is the government and the private sector going to pay? And that's where this always gets really, really messy.
Well, and of course, looming over all of this is the ghost of the failed healthcare reform effort in 1993 and 94. What lessons do you think the Obama administration would do best to learn from that failure?
I think there are several, and it's funny, just in the few days since the election, I've been watching some of the people on Capitol Hill, you know, sort of tiptoe around that. And, you know, I think we've already seen one of the lessons that has already been learned that I think President-elect Obama will get on his own is that on Capitol Hill, the Democrats already know what it feels like to be in the minority. They don't want to be there again. I think, you know, I think they could get T-shirts already that say, "Don't mess it up this time." They're already seeming very pragmatic and very sort of humble, if you will. You know, let's not overreach. Let's take this one step at a time. Let's work with Republicans. Let's do what we can do. You know, we're not going to run out and pass, you know, a single payer government run health care plan. Let's sort of take this in the small bites that we can get it. And I think Senator Obama sort of naturally comes with that temperament. If you, you know, will notice his health plan, unlike Hillary Clinton's health plan, which had an individual mandate, which would have required everyone to have coverage and would have, in fact, gotten to universal coverage, Senator Obama's plan didn't go that far. He didn't have a mandate for every adult. He only had a mandate for children. So he already was not as bold, if you will, as she was, as some of the other Democrats were. And he got beaten about the head and shoulders during the primaries for that, if you'll recall, by Senator Clinton and Senator Edwards. So he was already being a little bit more pragmatic and, you know, and cautious. So I think he comes from a more take it in small steps feeling. And I think that Congress is already feeling that way. And obviously, given the you know, obstacles he's looking at with this new administration, two wars, an enormous economic crisis, I would say that sort of it's kind of the antithesis of, you know, what it was like in this town when President Clinton got elected, which was, you know, finally after, you know, the years of Republican, after 12 years of Republican rule at that point, you know, the Democrats were like, okay, we've got the House, we've got the Senate, we've got the White House, let's do as much as we can, as fast as we can. That's not the feeling I'm getting right now. Now the feeling that I'm getting right now is, okay, we've got it back, let's not mess it up.
Well, and of course, the architect of the or one of the architects of the failed healthcare reform effort in 93 and 94 is a sitting senator. How much involvement is Hillary Clinton likely to have in this effort?
Oh, I think she's likely to have tremendous involvement. She's a senator on the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, one of the two main committees in the Senate that handles health reform legislation. Since she's been in the Senate, she's actually become known for getting an enormous amount done, working across party lines, doing things in a bipartisan manner. She's become quite an able legislator. So I think she's going to be that people are going to look to her for leadership, and that she's, you know, obviously got the expertise, and she knows where the fault lines are. She's made the mistakes before, and she's learned from them. So I think she's going to be sort of a very key figure in all of this.
You mentioned the Obama plan for health care. The only mandate was that it called for universal coverage among children. There were efforts to increase funding for the state children's health insurance program passed by Congress last year, but were shot down by the White House. Is that a bill that's likely to be resurrected with Barack Obama in the White House?
That's actually a bill that has to be resurrected fairly quickly, because the bill that did pass actually expires in March, and they're already talking about what will be in that bill when it comes back before Congress in either January or February, because it has to be done fast. And as I mentioned, I think already members are talking about keeping that somewhat modest. They're not going to go for a huge expansion. They want to get something done, you know, quickly, to say that, yes, we can do our work and get it done fast, probably with not too many bells and whistles. It will probably be fairly close to the bill that passed Congress and was vetoed twice by President Bush. But it probably won't last that long, because then they'll try to fold it into a broader health reform bill. They need to get that done, and they'll probably, I would guess, it will be a little more generous, perhaps, than the bill that was vetoed, but probably not very much. I think that bill will not be as expansive as some people might expect, and I think this is a reflection of, as I said, kind of the pragmatic attitude that we're already seeing out of, you know, this you know, nascent administration and the new Congress.
Is there a health care legacy that the Bush administration will leave?
Well, certainly the Medicare prescription drug bill, for better or worse. There are a lot of seniors who have drug coverage who didn't before. For some, it's getting increasingly expensive, and there'll be some efforts, I think, to tinker with that. There's a lot of people who have Medicare Advantage insurance coverage, private Medicare coverage, and because those plans are being paid very well, and I think that will be an early order of business in the new Democratic Congress to try to maybe scale back some of those payments. But I think that's certainly the biggest health care legacy that President Bush will leave is his mark on the Medicare program.
Well, your job will be an interesting one, I imagine, especially over the next few months and on into the beginning in the Obama administration.
It's already gotten geometrically busier.
Julie Rovner, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Julie Rovner is NPR's national health policy correspondent. She's also the author of Healthcare Politics and Policy, A to Z, now in its third edition, published by CQ Press. She joined us on the line from NPR in Washington. We'll take a short break now, and when we return, we'll take a look at healthcare policy from a Wisconsin perspective. This is Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio.